Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Now What? Where Do I Go From Here? A podcast to create awareness about reaching good health, well-being, and maximizing your potential. Now here's your hosts and favorite wellness advocates, Star Waters and Sandy Rogers.
Greetings and welcome, everyone. Thank you for being with us today on Now What? Where Do I Go From Here? And you have your two moderators of this show today with Star Waters, also known as the Wellness Wizard, and me, Sandy Rogers, and I am called the Wellness Gangster. So we have just a superb show lined up for you today. And we will be bringing that information to you shortly. There's a couple of things that we just want to take care of. Some people call it housekeeping. We call it, let's all get in the same energetic feel together. So first, what we want to do is give thanks to our ancestors, to all the ancestors for paving the way for us and for the many gifts and blessings that they bring to us. We know that we stand on their shoulders for strength and for knowledge, fortitude, resilience, bravery, and all the other. You know, we know that they got us, and we're very, very thankful. So, ancestors, we pay homage to you and give thanks to you and for the many gifts that you bestow upon us every single day. Ashe. Ashe, Asheo.
Asheo. So, Sandy.
Yes, ma'am.
This is the time of our show to share words and thoughts of inspiration.
Yes, ma'am.
And so I have a little something to share with you and our audience. So, as they say, let's get on into it.
All right.
All right. For no man can be blessed without the acceptance of his own head. That's a Yoruba proverb. The wise Africans knew and understood the power of the mind. People can only be good as their thoughts, as successful as their mental patterns, as progressive as their ideas. Africans did not rely on books, relative theories, or populist quotations. They listened to their thoughts, prayed for divine guidance, followed the intuitive urging. Education, money, fame, notoriety were considered to be as useless as dirty dishwater without a clean, firm, focused mind. Their process was simple. They developed a strong faith and connection to the Creator, a healthy love and ancestors and parents, a committed and dedication to the tradition of their family, and a trusting relationship to the spirit of their own head. Trust your head, and your first thought, regardless of what others may say. Your head takes you to the places you want to go. And the affirmation is, I bless the spirit of my head. And that was from Alanya Van Zandt, Acts of Faith.
That's so beautiful. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing that, Star. Very, very beautiful. Gives us food for thought, so to speak, you know, like, so what do we truly honor in this world? So, listen, audience, we are so thankful that you're here with us today. And we invite you to be an active part of the conversation if you would like. So our call-in number here is 516-531-9819. And if you push 1 on your phone, it will alert us that you want to speak live on air with us. And just make sure that you have no background noise, as we really would like to have the best quality for playback for anyone wishing to hear this message again, which I know is going to be outstanding. I know that it will. So it is my pleasure to be able to introduce our speaker, and Star is actually going to be the one conducting the interview with this young professional. And so I'm so geeked that I get this honor. Dr. Tyrone Waters was born and raised in Portland, Oregon, and he is the son of former Oregon State Senator Avail Gordley, the first African-American female elected to the Oregon State Senate. And he's the son of U.S. Army Captain Nichelle Waters, one of several first African-American officers of the Oregon National Guard. Dr. Waters has written a book titled You Would Be Paranoid Too If This Happened to You, U.S. Destructive Practices, A True Life Story Told by Dr. Tyrone Waters. It's on the subject of mental health, racism, and being a harassed, targeted black male in the United States of America and its destructive practices. His book is available worldwide. I lost my track there. Worldwide at Author Reputation Press. The book was written and designed to help those with mental illness cope, as well as to help those whose relatives also may suffer from mental illness. Dr. Waters is a wounded healer who was shot by the Portland police and is a pastoral counselor and life coach, helping those who suffer from mental health issues. His mother has a mental health center named the OSHA Avail Gordley Center for Healing in Portland, Oregon, which was opened after Dr. Waters was shot at by Portland police to bring cultural-specific competency to the mental health system in the state of Oregon for African Americans, and is the only mental health center of its kind in the state of Oregon. This young man right here, I tell you, has such a beautiful, well-written book, and so I know you're going to be blessed. I know you are going to receive information beyond anything you could have possibly thought of if you're not involved in mental health and in that arena. And even if you are, Dr. Waters brings it real and raw to you. So I'm going to turn the mic over to Star, and she's going to conduct the interview.
Thank you, Sandy. You said, you're geek. I also am geek because I know this young man. I know him very well. There are some things that we have in common. One of the things we have in common is from where we are from, Portland, Oregon. We have that in common. And also we have the last name, Waters, in common. So as we go along in this interview and this program today, you'll see how those things, how they happen. So, without further ado, and we won't have you waiting not another minute longer. Dr. Waters, are you on the line?
Yes. Hello to you.
Hi.
Yes. Hello to you.
Hey, Dr. Waters.
We're so happy. And that's Sandy that's speaking.
Hello to you, Sandy.
Hello, I'm so excited to hear what you have to say. I just had to butt into the conversation right there. So I will allow Star to go right ahead.
Well, butt in. Anytime, just butt in. So, Ty, excuse me. May I call you Ty?
Yes, please. Yes,
okay,
please.
Thank you. I was taking too many advantages here, so thank you very much. Tyrone, I had the pleasure to read your book, and I might add and let the audience know that, as they say, this is not your first rodeo, that this is one of several books that you have written. And I have not read all of them, but I pretty much have all of them, and I've gone through it. I'm one of those quick reader type people, you know, the thumb through it and stuff, but I wasn't able to do that with this last book. And so I just want us to acknowledge and celebrate the work that you put into creating this book. My hat goes off to you. You did a wonderful job. And again, I will remind the audience of the name of the book. You would be paranoid too if this happened to you. U.S. Destructive Practices, a true story told by Dr. Tyrone Waters. How long did it take you to write this book, Tyrone?
It took me years to actually compile all of the information. And then once that was completed, it was just a matter of finding a publishing house to publish under and to get an agent. And everything else went real smoothly. I would say the process from print to publishing went probably about 90 days.
Oh, wonderful. Awesome. Okay, what I would like to do is, because the contents of the book and the experiences that you went through during all this time, and I might also add, not only you go through it, although you went through it, you know, more personally than anyone, but I have to also think about your family. You know, being your family must have just been, oh my goodness, so heart-wrenching to see their loved ones, their child, their nephews, you know, all of that, sister, brothers or whatever, go through the things that you went through. And I kind of want to just kind of ease on to the experiences that you had, because I don't want our audience to be dropped off into all of that. I would like to start off with, what type of upbringing did you have? What kind of things did you want to do and become as a child? Can you talk about that?
Yes. My childhood was very pleasant. I had the opportunity of growing up with two mothers, my mom and my stepmom. And so being around a step-sister and working as a child at the age of 15 in the state of Oregon, that was the youngest that you could legally work in the state of Oregon with the work permit. So I started out working at a very young age and stayed employed just all throughout the years, but starting out at age 15. My dreams and aspirations when I was young were wanting to be an airline pilot, and I went to Benson Polytechnic High School and majored in aviation and hydraulics. From there, I joined the U.S. Navy and became an aircraft mechanic, repairing naval aircraft in the Navy and being assigned to aircraft carrier and repairing naval aircraft on board a U.S. aircraft carrier ship. And then from there, I was employed by Delta Airlines and worked for them for a couple of years in the aviation industry. I do have experience piloting in aircraft. I got my student pilot's license after I got out of the U.S. Navy. And while I was in the U.S. Navy, I did take flying lessons and operated a Cessna 152 and also a Cessna 172 four-seater aircraft.
Wow, that's awesome. That's awesome. Wow, you are very accomplished for what it was that you wanted to do, because from what I know about people, when they're children, they already know what they want to do. It's like they are still connected to their sacred contract. We all come here contract that we are to fulfill to create the life and help the people that we're to help, and we bring that with us. So always listen to the words and the play of children, because they're letting you know what their divine purpose is. So many times it gets derailed because of circumstances or maybe well-meaning people like parents and, teachers or whatever that will put doubt in the minds of the children as they're growing up. But we all know what it is we want to be. What do you think about that statement, Ty?
I think that's very accurate and very true. It's a very good statement. I can identify with it. I would encourage any youngster coming up to know that they should try to achieve whatever their dreams are. Don't let anyone hold you back. Don't let anyone tell you that you can't do it. Because the opportunities are there. You just have to go after them, and you have to just have a positive mind and tell yourself each day that you can do it. And it's not going to be an easy road, I'll tell you that. It wasn't for me, but I never gave up, and I had the right people in my corner when they saw that I was serious and wanted to be an aircraft mechanic in the Navy. They wouldn't let me give up. And there were people that did tell me to give up, but at the same time, there were people that wanted me to succeed in the aviation industry. And when I got my student pilot's license, that was just the icing on the cake. I felt like I had accomplished a great deal. And even though I no longer fly private aircraft, I have explored paragliding and parasailing, which is a totally different type of flying. But I would just tell youngsters out there, if someone tells you that you're not able to fly and get a pilot's license, there's paragliding, there's parasailing, and those are options where you can be a ground school instructor and teach other African Americans about weather and flight, pursue it that way.
Oh, that's good. And how many years ago, or about what time, was it that you were actually doing the flying and repairing the aircraft and all of that? Can you give us like a timeline?
Yes, that would have been in the early 80s and 90s.
Okay. Okay. So I have it on good authority that as I led off about, you know, children in their play, in their playtime, how they reenact the characters that they want to be as adults. And I have on good authority, you mentioned you have a sister, that you and your sister daily played. Do you remember some of the things that you guys did each day as you played, role played and everything? You remember that?
Yes. my sister Shawnee had, we would pretend to be on her show, TV show, which was the Shawnee Shore show. We called her Shawnee
yes.
Shore after Dinah Shore. And she would bring me on her show and interview me as a airline pilot of Afro Airlines. And so we would go through these skits, you know, every day. And Shawnee was also an aspiring actress. She wanted to be in the entertainment industry and become an actress. And she did do some acting during our childhood, during our high school years with the Sojourner Truth Theater in Portland, Oregon. And I also did some magic production with the Sojourner Truth Theater as a magician. And my sister Shawnee worked hand in hand with me doing the magic productions because she was my assistant.
Yes, I'm chuckling because I remember those days, and you two never tired. You never tired of that. I mean, like, Dinah Shore came on every day with different guests. You and Shawnee role-played that every single day. The Shawnee Shore show, and you would come on, and I believe that there was a hat that you wore that belonged to your dad that, you know, looked like it might have been a pilot's hat or something, and you guys role-played that to the hilt. And it was so funny. But then later, I could see how you were going in the direction of your dreams, as was Rashonda, because she was quite a very great speaker and actress, and that's how come I know that children role play their sacred contract that they came here with. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Ty. It brought lots of joy in my heart and a big smile on my face. Thank you.
Yes.
So, yeah, go ahead. You want to say something?
Oh, I was just saying yes to acknowledging your comments.
And so, did you ever get into the aviation field once you got out of the Army? I mean, not out of the Army, out of the Navy? Yes.
Yes. I was able to get employed with two companies when I got out of the Navy. The first one was with Sky Chefs, And I worked with Sky Chefs while I applied to get hired with Delta Airlines. And so I worked for Sky Chefs for roughly about, I want to say, 6 months. And then I got a call from Delta Airlines for an interview. And they said, do you have a problem getting on an airplane going back to Atlanta for your interview? And I said, no. What time do you want me to be there? And they said, well, we need you to be at the airport in the morning, the first flight out, going nonstop to Atlanta for your interview. And there were six of us on the plane, and I think four out of the six of us got hired. Then I went to work at Portland International Airport for Delta Airlines as a cabin service attendant. They transferred me to the ramp department, and I worked as a ramp agent the rest of the time that I worked for Delta, which was about a 2-year period.
Oh, wow. Okay. That flight attendant snuck up on me. I didn't know that.
Well, it wasn't a flight attendant position. It was cabin service. So the difference between cabin service and flight attendant at Delta anyway, and all the airlines call it something different depending on which airline you work for. But I was responsible for working with the flight attendants on the ground and making sure that they had all of their service items for in-flight, such as the meals, the beverages, making sure that all the pillows were in the overhead bins, that all the blankets were folded properly, vacuumed and cleaned the interior of the passenger cabin, and made sure that there was potable water on board for the passengers. And so that was the extent of my duties as a cabin service person.
Okay. Well, thank you for clarifying the difference, because me as a consumer, I just thought it was all the same thing.
No. No, the flight attendant aspect is a little different. As you know, when you get on an airplane, they're there for comfort and safety. Safety is foremost, and they are there to do their job in flight to make sure that you have a safe experience while flying. And should anything occur in flight, and an in-flight emergency, then they're prepared to deal with those situations in the air and on the ground.
Okay. And so looking at that, at those experiences and how they're like lining up, I bet you were just so excited to see that your dream of becoming a airline pilot was on target, and you were on the move and making some headway. I bet you were just wonderfully excited, right?
Yes, I was. At one point when I worked for Delta, I applied for a flight attendant position, and they flew me to Los Angeles for the interview for flight attendant position, and I was passed over. I didn't get it, but I still remained on with the airline through my 2-year tenure there as a ramp agent.
Okay. And so how did that go? How did the position as a ramp agent, did you still see upward mobility by taking that position and looking at you were on track for your career goal?
Well, let me explain real quickly what a ramp agent does, and then I'll touch on the other. A ramp agent is responsible for weight and balance of the aircraft and loading and unloading luggage and cargo into the cargo bin of the aircraft. And it also deals with fueling the aircraft as well prior to flight. So it's a very important position. You have to make sure that all the numbers crunch properly so that that aircraft is not overloaded or misloaded in such a way that would make it unsafe to fly. And you have to make sure that you have enough fuel on board so that it can make it to its destination where it's going to. So it's a very responsible, very intense day-to-day operation doing that, and I would be responsible for all the flights coming in and out of the Portland International Airport for Delta Airlines as a ramp agent, working on those ground crews, doing that for those flights going inbound and outbound of Portland. And I'm sorry, could you repeat the second part of the question for me?
I don't remember. It might have been, were you just really excited that you were, you know,
yes,
in route?
Yes, I was very excited to be working for a commercial airline. I was excited that I was able to use the skills that I had learned in the Navy and apply them working at Delta, and also the skills that I had learned at Vinson Polytechnic High School, and apply those skills both in the military and at Delta Airlines. And I can tell you that when I got the interview for the flight attendant position, I did feel for a time that my career was moving in a way that looked promising, and then it took a turn for the worse. I had a white male supervisor who didn't believe that males should be leaving his department to go work as a flight attendant at Delta. And so it was a very white male dominated, Caucasian dominated industry at Delta. They did have black employees there, don't get me wrong, but the opportunities for advancement at that time when I was there were very limited.
Okay. And so, how did you say that it at this juncture, that's when your dream started? It's like, you know, when people are in this wonderful dream, something happens to make them come out of that sleep state. So, and then the dream is deferred, gone, poof, it's over. So what were some of the things, I mean, let me ask you, is that correct in what I'm trying to assimilate here as a picture
yes.
for you?
Yes, it is. It is. It's very accurate.
Okay.
I was subjected to racism, harassment, homophobia. I was run over with one of the ground vehicles at the airport. I was punched by a coworker. I was cussed at, called the N-word. One time I came to work in the early morning hours. They had taped earrings to my locker. I came to work another occasion, and there was a cow's brain sitting on top of my locker. And the harassment just continued. It was very unsettling. Horrifying. When I finally was terminated from Delta, I felt like a big cloud, a dark cloud, had been released from over me because I knew that from that day forward, I would not have to go to work and be subjected to that horrific, disruptive atmosphere.
Wow, Ty, that just is so unsettling and frightening. So let me just ask this question now, because you did use the word homophobic. So, Ty, you're living your life and existence as a black male, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. And are you also a gay man?
I would say so at this point in my life, yes.
Were you there at that point, at this time that we're now talking about?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the way the question was phrased.
Were you homosexual or gay during that time that you just talked about?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And yes.
So you were being discriminated against on two different levels, gay and black, right?
Yes, ma'am. Correct.
Okay. So I'm thinking, and I was just horrified that you had to come to your locker and see some animal's brain on your locker. I mean, my goodness. Everybody in there would have known if it had happened to me, because I'd still be screaming and dancing around and all of that.
Yes.
What happened? How did you deal with that? And did you bring somebody in authority to see it?
What happened was, when I tried to bring it to the attention of the supervisor, the brain had been removed from the top of the locker. So by the time we got back to view it, it had been taken down, removed. And they said, well, you don't have any proof or evidence of that happening. And then I did file a police report with the Port of Portland police regarding having been assaulted physically, punched by a coworker, having been called the N-word, having been run over by Delta Airlines ground vehicle. All of that was reported to the Port of Portland police in police reports. And ironically, one of the Port of Portland police officers' sons was my coworker, and he was one of the individuals that was participating daily in the harassment towards me. And the Port of Portland police, their position was they weren't going to do anything about it. And they did take reports. They did document everything very clearly. There was an incident where I went out to my vehicle at the airport in the employee parking lot, and they had drew X signs on into the paint of the car and KKK signs into the paint of the car. All of that was reported to the Port of Portland police. But again, they their position was they weren't going to do anything about it. They documented it. They told me to keep reporting. When I reported it to my supervisors at Delta, they told me to stop going to the police and to stop reporting things, and that if I continue to do so, that would be grounds for termination. And I continued to report things as they occurred, and Delta fired me for that.
Wow. So, you know, to have happened to you today, or let me also state the statement this way, if that had happened then, and they have telephones with cameras on them now, or like they do now, I'm wondering if you taking pictures of the animal brain on your locker and seeing your car, just, you know, that stuff vandalized like it was, if that would have made any difference in your favor, you having your own.
I think it would have.
Yes, right. Because they did have time to take, while you were going and telling somebody, they taking the thing down. And it sounds to me like part of their strategy was to make you look like you were crazy.
Right.
So we're going to go in, we're going to get deeper into your story, Tyrone. But I want to, at this time, open up our phone lines to our audience. If there's anyone that would like to call in and ask a question of Dr. Ty, I want to give you the okay that you can do that. And if you don't have the number, if you're on our website, our phone number is 516-531-9819. Press 1 to alert us that you would like to speak live on air, and we will allow that to happen. So
we did have
waiting,
a caller earlier.
Oh, they're gone now?
Yeah, so caller, if you're still out there, please just hit 1 again. My apologies. I did not want to interrupt Dr. Waters as he was giving his story. So, okay, here we have. It is area code 770-873. Please give us your name and any remark you'd like to make. You may be on mute, so take yourself off of mute.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, ma'am.
Can
yes.
You, all right.
Yes.
Hello. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
How's everybody? Can you hear me? I'm so excited
yeah.
to be
yeah.
back on again. It's good
yes,
to hear you
yes.
all voices. It is. Hello,
okay.
Tyrone.
Hello.
Would you like?
How are you?
Would you like to identify yourself, caller?
This is Deidre, better known. Can I say this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Better known as Aunt Dee Dee.
That's
better
right.
known as Aunt Dee Dee. Ty, I just was wondering, after all that I remember, I was in Portland at that time when those things were happening for you. It was so disheartening for me, and I just it was hard to even figure out what to do or how to help. And looking back on those things and all that happened, how are you really doing now with all of those things behind you? Have you been able to take them as learning experiences, or do you hold any kind of animosity or grudges, or have you been able to deal with it and move on and just know that your higher power has you and that, you know, that everything is, God has a plan for us in our life, and that, excuse me, but that the system, and I wanted to say another word, but I'm going to say the system, cannot break us. We're strong black people, and you didn't break from that. You had some issues, and you had some fall downs and breakdowns from it because it's such an emotional experience. But I commend you for going through all of that and still standing, being able to write your books and tell your story to be able to help someone else. And I thank God for that he made you strong with all that you had gone through and the suffering from a mental health standpoint in a lot of those areas that you're still standing. And I just want to know, how are you feeling today about those things? And did those things that happened, did they somehow make you the person you are now and give you the strength that you have and to do the things that you've done and that you're doing?
Yes, the answer to all of that is I've let go and moved on. I wrote the book to have closure and to have release and healing, okay, and to help others who may be experiencing maybe not the exact same thing, but some similarities in their life. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. through the grace of God, God has brought me through it all. I can truly tell you God has not forsaken me. I'm not mad mm-hmm. at anybody.
Okay.
God has brought me through this life journey, I will call it. And I am doing better now that I've had an opportunity to write about it, to talk about mm-hmm. it, to do public mm-hmm. speaking, to counsel mm-hmm. others about their experiences. And mm-hmm. So it has come full circle, and I feel better. I'm my mom's caregiver. I take care of her 7 days a week now and do practice my my magic on the side. And so I don't want for anything, you know, I don't want for anything. God has blessed me with a roof over my head. I'm no longer homeless. And mm-hmm. I am moving on and enjoying life to the fullest. And I just take one day at a time, and I thank God for this day. And I rejoice in all the days that I have in them.
Amen. Amen. That's good. That's what I wanted to hear. Thank you. Thank mm-hmm. you. Thank you.
Wow. Well, thank you, Auntie Dee Dee, for calling in. Mm-hmm. And I know it was a surprise for Ty, right?
Yes. Yes, it's good to hear from you.
You too, honey. I love you. Give your mom my love, too.
I will.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dee Dee. And so I had written down, and we haven't even gotten into the meat mm-hmm. of Tyrone's story. We have not. And so, Tyrone, I just want you to, after you left Delta Airlines, and you said you had this feeling of this heavy cloud and heavy weight off of you. From that point, did things start getting better for you?
No, they actually continued to spiral for a period of time. I went to work for a Boeing contractor at the Hillsborough Airport, and then I was laid off from there. And from that point, I had found out that I had been blacklisted in the aviation industry and unable to really seek any type of employment after that, and I wasn't able to hold down a steady job. I had filed a lawsuit against it Airlines for the harassment and discrimination, and that case was subsequently dismissed. And while all of that was going on, it was very hard for me to seek employment and to be gainfully employed. I also might add that during the deposition process, during the lawsuit, the Portland police had stopped me in my vehicle. I was so terrified that I pulled up in front of my Aunt Faye's home and got out of the car, raised my hands, and the police took me to jail, cited me, and released me. And the next day I had depositions at the U.S. Bancor Tower here in Portland, where the Delta attorneys were here to do the depositions for my lawsuit. And the first question that came out of their mouth was, "Mr. Waters, where were you last night?" And I said, "I was in jail." And so they went on to depose me and ask me questions about why I had been taken to jail and what have you.
So I want to just paint a picture of the place that you are from. It's called Portland, Oregon. And
yes.
Portland, Oregon, is very heavily Caucasian majority. I don't really know. Somebody might say, well, what does that have to do with anything? It's a big town, but it's also a small town at the same time. And so it's not surprising to hear that you were blackballed, you know, blacklisted or whatever. Those in power can and do that to people to make their lives absolutely miserable. I've seen it played out not only with you, Tyrone, but with other people and also with myself. You would not believe some of the things that the majority of people do to put their foot on you, or as they used to say back in the day, put their foot on your neck to keep you down and prevent you from having the same right and opportunity as anybody to make a living and have a wonderful life. And so I'm sorry to hear that that happened to you, but I'm not surprised. And must have been very scary and disheartening and all of that. And I apologize to you for people being so cruel that they would go to no end to make other people have a hard life. I'm sorry for you on that.
Yes. And, you know, I want to say it's not you that should be apologizing. It's the people in power and the people that did that to me that should be apologizing. And they haven't. You know, they haven't. They never want to admit to any wrongdoing. They don't want to admit that they were wrong. At the end of the day, it's them. They need to not necessarily make amends, but just apologize for, you know, for what happened. I never gained anything monetarily out of the lawsuit that I filed, and my life was turned it upside down and sideways and backwards. But I feel like I have a good grasp on things now, and I'm moving forward. And, you know, it is what it is. And, yeah.
Well, they say time is the great healer.
And it
so
is.
There's been a lot of time from then to now. And a lot of experiences, and as I'll just call her Auntie Dee Dee. As Auntie Dee Dee said, you know, we're all proud of you. You're still standing, you're still striving, you're still elevating, and you're still doing things to help others. So you have a very unselfish attitude and spirit about you. Even though you've gone through things, you are using your experiences to help other people who may be walking in your footsteps or wearing
yes.
your shoes or whatever the term is. And for that alone, I am just so proud of you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Absolutely.
I would like to add right here that Dr. Waters, what you've done with your book, and I know that you and Star are not even close to being finished with the interview, but because you've been able to articulate with such detail the experiences that you've encountered, I believe what you've done is given individuals permission to document their own stories or perhaps to go back and document something that has happened to one of their loved ones, if not themselves. But the care that you took in making sure that you had the information and that it was accurate information, I really find it extremely helpful and beneficial. I've worked with the mental health community for a number of years, And a lot of times people that have those experiences do feel not only not heard, but silenced, you know, where they're not able to share what they've truly experienced. And so yours may be a little bit more analytical, but the ability to be able to document that is just really powerful. And so I want to say thank you as well, and just add that commentary to the wonderful, beautiful work that you've done in your book. So thank you, sir.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you. I appreciate that. It's comments
yes.
like that that I get, you know, day in and day out that help me to keep persevering and to let me know that I'm doing the right thing by sharing my story and it helping others.
Well, the reason why I said I apologize for those people is because what we all must understand is that we must forgive as well. Forgiveness, like you were going to say, you let go and let God. That's forgiveness.
Yeah.
And it is, we cannot, you know, hold on to what people did for us and just keep holding or to us and keep holding on. That is just a sure way and a short path to be in the mental institution because we're not mm-hmm. able to let it go. But what
That's
we
right.
must understand is when we let go and let God, God's got it. And
yeah.
and we will be released when we do the forgiveness. So
yeah.
you know. And I just really am so proud of you. So what I want to do, because our time is running, I want people to feel some of the other things that you have experienced from this. I mean, what they say, the beat keeps going and, you know, things keep happening. And it seems like wherever you go, there you are. You keep getting the same experiences over and over again. It just is like carrying around lint on your coat, you know. How
yeah.
the heck do you get rid of that lint? Because you don't want it on you anymore, but it keeps following you. So why don't you just dive on the inside and give us a little bit, and I mean a little bit. What we want people
okay.
to do is to look for your book because, as Sandy mentioned, it is so brilliantly written and with such amazing detail and documents and all of that. I mean, it had my head swimming. It really did. So let our audience know some of the things that you've gone through.
Yes, yes. And I just want to say the book is available through Author Reputation Press, and it's very affordable. My agent wanted me to have it be this phenomenal figure, and I said, no, I want it to be accessible for everybody to be able to get the book. So we went back and forth on the price, and he's like, well, you could make so much more if you had it set at this price. And I said, no, I want people to be able to afford to be able to buy it. So we agreed upon a price of about $5. Real quick, I want to say that I have experienced discrimination in housing here in Portland, Oregon. I have been institutionalized here in the state of Oregon at the state hospital as a result of going through the trials and tribulations of what I experienced. And I was further harassed, further injured, being institutionalized. So that was not helpful in my recovery, although they said that it should have been. I disagree with that, the powers that be. I want to touch real quick on if you'll allow me to, some additional information on schizophrenia and expanding the possibilities of how schizophrenia is treated. While there is no cure for schizophrenia yet, research has led to a newer generation of medicines that give new hope. These medicines can help your loved ones manage your symptoms. Medications for schizophrenia are called antipsychotic drugs, and although the exact way these medicines work is unknown, antipsychotics are thought to restore the balance of chemicals in the brain so messages don't get confused. Older generation conventional antipsychotic drugs have been around for over 50 years, and these drugs manage the positive symptoms of schizophrenia. Newer generation atypical antipsychotics have been available for around the last 15 years or so, and these drugs are described as atypical because they are different from conventional antipsychotics. Atypical antipsychotics treat both the positive and negative symptoms of schizophrenia in the brain. And so that's what I can share with you. It may sound a little confusing, but it's not. When we talk about symptoms, we're talking about does a person see things? Do they hear voices? Are things really happening to them versus not happening to them? Are they delusional, or do they have psychosis, which means that some of the things going on in their environment may not actually be happening? So the medications, what they do, these atypical antipsychotics, and I'll tell you what I take. I take Abilify. Some people call it now I can't think of the generic name, but I take Abilify. And I take that every evening at 7 p.m. And what it does is it balances out the chemical imbalances in your brain. So, for example, if you're someone that has high blood pressure and you take blood pressure medication to keep your blood pressure under control, or if you have diabetes and you take medication to keep your diabetes under control, the same can be true for someone that takes a antipsychotic medication for their mental illness or schizophrenia to keep their mental health under control. So that's what the medication does. And a lot of people benefit from medication. Some people benefit from no medication at all. And some people have horrific side effects from the medication. And that was my experience early on, and me not wanting to take any medication because of the side effects. One of the side effects that I experienced was severe muscle pain in my body, and on a scale of 1 to 10, it was like 100. It made you feel like you wanted to get out of your body. That's how bad the pain was. And I experienced that in the state hospital, and I went to the nurse and I said, something's not right. And she gave me Benadryl and Cogentin. And Benadryl and Cogentin, they have side effects because they cause you to become bloated, and they also cause you to be constipated. So that's the side effect of the side effect medication. So you're darned if you do, darned if you don't, and you're like, well, I don't want to take any of it. So they finally, over the years, found some medications that I have benefited from. One of them, ironically, caused me to have a stroke, and I woke up in my apartment. My glass living room table was shattered. I had hit my head and passed out from a stroke, and blood was everywhere. And the doctors at the VA to this day adamantly denied that the medication caused me to have a stroke, but if you read the formulary, it can cause a stroke. But they didn't want to admit to any wrongdoing with regard to their prescribing policies. And so that's what I suffered from one of the medications. And I had family members saying, oh, Ty, you know, just take your medication, take your medication. They didn't understand that I was having some very, very, very severe side effects. And they also have a condition which is called tardive dyskinesia. People that take antipsychotic medications get tremors or shakiness in their hands. And that is a side effect of the medication. And it is irreversible, by the way. They're just coming out with some medications now where they say that they have tardive dyskinesia treatment available. I have not participated in that, so I cannot speak to the efficacy and effectiveness of it.
Okay, wow, you took us there. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that we need to know what's happening to our loved ones when they are put on different medications. And you really gave a wonderful description, because who of us have not seen people with tremors and all that kind of stuff? And, you know, now I know it's due to the medication that they're taking. And
yes.
I also know that it's hard for them to get the formula right, to get the right formula. So there's constant, like you're a guinea pig. It's constant,
yes,
trying to get the medication. It could take years, right?
That's correct. Yes, it could. And just imagine during that time frame, you're suffering. You're suffering because something isn't right. And they're not getting it right by providing or prescribing the correct medication that works with your body. So it's not the patient's fault. It's the prescriber not being culturally sensitive sometimes, because African Americans experience different symptoms compared to Caucasian Americans with regard to the side effects of the antipsychotic medication. So if you have a prescriber that is just not willing to listen to you and that is just writing the prescription and shoving it down your throat and saying, be on your way, take your medication, that's not right. You need to be seeing someone else that is going to be more sensitive to what you're telling them, because those side effects are horrific, they're real, and they have a dramatic impact and outcome on your well-being and your day-to-day lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting, because...
Go ahead, Didi.
That's interesting about the medicine part, because going to a doctor, a medical doctor, and it's been for centuries now, going to doctors, which that's what we did growing up. But I started realizing, becoming an adult, being on my own and learning more about medicines and having to use, having to go to the doctor for things. I've always been fairly healthy in my life, praise God, that I would never been sickly or had to go to the doctor for a lot of medications and things like that. But I noticed that even when I came to Atlanta and was diagnosed with asthma, I didn't take a lot of the medication they gave me because of side effects. And a doctor will say, okay, well, I'm going to give you so-and-so for that because you need a little this or that. But nobody ever talks about, before you walk out that door, beware of the side effects. Or there are side effects to this medication. I just want to give you a insight on that. So in case you do or don't want to take it, or if it gets bad, you can let me know. It's just so casual, that prescription writing, because they're getting paid. That's how I feel.
Anyway. Yeah. Yeah, yes. And the pharmaceutical companies are the big drug pushers of these medications. They are the ones that go into the doctor's offices. They go to the mental health clinics like Cascadia Behavioral Healthcare here in Portland, and they sit down and they throw these luncheons. And while they're treating all the employees to lunch, they're talking about their medications and how they will benefit their clients, and we want you to prescribe our medication because we feel that this is the best way to do it. And they're receptive to it. Why? Because they're getting lunch on them, and they come all the time, once, two times a month, for these big luncheons right there on the property. And I'm witness to it because I was there when it happened. And that's how they push their drugs. And it's a big market, and I'm not saying not to take medication, don't get me wrong, but you have to be on the right medication, and the right medication has to be to where you can benefit from it and have the least amount of side effects so that you can have quality of life.
That's right. That's right.
Dr. Waters, I would like to ask a question, and I had asked it before, but I was on mute. But and it may be a little bit beyond your scope of knowledge, and if that's so, that's okay. But you were talking about different medications, and trust me, I understand. I've also have received medications that did not agree with my system. But when they were attempting to write the right prescription for you, was there ever a time that they said, okay, we need to allow 60 days or 6 days or 6 hours or whatever for the other medication, the one that didn't work, that they need to allow a certain time frame for that to get out of your system, or did they just put you on something else which could have been aggravated by the initial one that was causing you problems? I'm just real curious as to how that new medication came up for you.
Yes, and the answer to that is both. They need to allow for the other medication to completely come out of your system. They need to allow time for the new medication to be at its full efficacy point in your system. And honestly, depending on what they prescribe, depending on the medication, it can take 5 days, it could take 2 weeks, it could take 30 days. For your body to build up enough efficacy in your system to where you are benefiting from it. So it's not a overnight cure-all by any means. You're not going to see immediate results overnight.
Thank you for your response.
I'm sorry, Sam, I didn't mean to interrupt you. That was a great question, Sandy. It really was. And who of us even think about having time for the old to leave our system before we put in the new?
Right.
And I would just like to say that I purposely did not ask Dr. Waters for many more examples that I read from his book, because I would like to encourage people to purchase the book so that they can, because it was so brilliantly written with such stark details. I mean, you came up with receipts and all the names that you, the addresses that you lived in. I mean, I'm like, whoa, I barely remember the last address I was at, you know, but you had like address after address and people's names, and it was just brilliantly written. And I do have to share, though, that after reading half of the book, I fell into a depression, you know, not where I couldn't get out of bed or anything, but my heart just went out to you. No one, no human should have to suffer the way that you have. But they say God doesn't give you anything more than what you can handle.
That's
and
correct.
You went through all of this, and this is just in my little human mind. You went through all of this to be, you said you are a wounded healer. You are reaching back, Tyrone Wayne Waters, and you are helping those who are walking in the shoes that you have walked in on a different level, not as a physician, not as a mental health person that went to school and learned all this stuff, but you're reaching back with that knowledge of what it feels to be in a body that is experiencing these type of treatments. And I applaud you. You even went on to become a life coach. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, after I was locked up at the Oregon State Hospital, I had an opportunity where I was living at. I came home one day and there was a piece of mail, and it was for a life coaching program, and I tossed it to the side. I was like, life coaching, oh, you know. And so I came home one day after that and picked it up, and I read the curriculum about the course, and the outline of the course. And I said, well, this is something that I think I can do. And at the time, I was on supervision or probation, if you will. And I let my counselor know that I did not want to attend any groups. I didn't want to be around a bunch of white people and seeing them relapse every week in group and talking about that, and that it wasn't benefiting me, and that I was going to go to school. And that if I couldn't go to school, they could just lock me back up, but I wasn't going to go to any groups. So she worked it out with her supervisors and the powers that be in the court, and I went to school every day, did my dissertation with the life coaching, and graduated, got my credentials, and never looked back. And they were blown away because they didn't believe that someone with mental illness, as I did, the severity, could have the potential to even pass the class and graduate and get credentials for it. And I proved them wrong. I proved them wrong. And I graduated, I got my credentials, and I started practicing as a holistic life coach.
And weren't you also influenced by someone else?
Yes,
around life coaching.
My mom star, my stepmom star. She is also a life coach, and we're both life coaches, and we talk about the practice, you know, and it's very rewarding. And what it is helping people to come up with solutions to their problems. So we don't actually do the work. The client does the work, and we just help guide them to come up with solutions to their problems. And once they do that, we get them to a point to where they feel comfortable with the solution that they came up with on their own to solve whatever problem that they may be experiencing holistically.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And I also want to share that when you told me that you were going on to become a life coach, one of the things that I had learned when I was going through my classes was that one must be, in order to become a life coach, they must be well balanced. And so
yeah.
My first opinion was like, I don't know. I don't know if this is going to work for him. But looking backwards now, I can see what a wonderful tool you having the experience of living
right.
in a world
right.
that your clients are living in that will give you that edge, will give your clients that powerhouse that they need to have, because you understand about the meds and all that stuff. You understand about, you know, whatever you go through as a person living as a schizophrenic paranoid or paranoia or whatever, whereas someone else is only textbook. So I applaud you, my brother. You are right on time. I applaud
Thank you.
You. And also, the time is running out, but I also want to say what an inspiration you've been to other people, and especially there in the Portland, Oregon area, because we mentioned earlier, you mentioned, and we talked about earlier, about how the majority race people as therapists and counselors in the mental health field cannot relate to people of color. And therefore, the people of color do not get the help that they need to have based on biases from the counselors, not knowing the culture. And through the experiences that you went through, and not only you, but your mother, former Senator, Oregon Senator Adele Gordley, there is in her name a can you tell us about that, her clinic?
Yes, it's called the OHSU Abel Gordley Center for Healing, and it is here located in downtown Portland on Alder Street. Excuse me. And it's the first clinic of its kind in Portland, Oregon, in the state of Oregon, that specifically deals with African Americans and cultural competency specific mental health issues. And I'm very proud of my mom and the other individuals in the community that championed behind getting the center open, getting the funding from the state to keep it open and keep it solvent and to keep the doors open so that anyone African American in the city of Portland or state or from wherever can come and receive mental health care treatment that is culturally competent and specific to their mental health care needs.
And OHSU stands for what, Tyrone?
Yes, Oregon Health Sciences University, Abel Gordley Center for Healing.
And so many cutting-edge medical things happen at the Oregon Hospital, whatever, OHSU. I mean, cutting edge. It has given, by me being from Portland and working in the health field, I have had privy to be on several projects. I have co-authored studies, and one of them, where my name is a co-author, is on mental health. And, you know, like, I am just really honored to be part of that. And we are all blessed and honored that what you went through, what your mom went through, because you're your mother's only child. So you can imagine people as a parent seeing your son go through all of the horrific things that Tyrone mm-hmm. had to go through. That mm-hmm. it puts you in jeopardy of losing your mind, you know. And so my hat goes off to you and former Senator Abel Gordley for the work that you all are doing and have done and will do in the community of Portland, Oregon, United States of America. Thank you mm-hmm. so much.
I would like to ask one question before we close out. We've got about 5 minutes left, Dr. Waters. can you share with us how you use your experiences in your pastoral counseling? Is it any different from the work that you do as a life coach, or just wanted to see if there was a difference between the two?
There is a difference, but they correlate with one another. And the way that there's a difference is with life coaching, you're helping people come up with solutions to their problems. In pastoral counseling, you're dealing with things on a more spiritual level. However, life coaching and pastoral counseling can correlate with one another, because spirituality can also be used in life coaching. So I find that they can both be used together in those sessions with my clients that choose to have one or the other or both coincide in their sessions. So that's how I deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I just have a comment. This is Dee. I'm just sitting here in awe of us as African-American people in this world and in this country, but in this country even more. Thinking about what's going on now, the pandemic, the things that had been happening to us as a people, George Floyd, Ahmaud here in Georgia, all over the country what had gone on. But even before that, the slavery that we came through, our ancestors came through. It's amazing how strong a people we are, because I just feel like to have carried the weight of the of our people, our ancestors, and us here today right now, it's amazing. God is so good, because we could all be a basket case, you know? And to think of how strong we are as a people, those that just and dealt with, and to think about how much did those things like the beatings and seeing lynchings and being held down, your foot on your neck, and we rose strong still. You know, if any other race, I think, would be walking around here crazy like zombies. Do you guys agree? It's just amazing. We are a strong people, and I thank God I am an African American woman.
Can I just say real quick in closing? Here's a meditation exercise that you can practice daily. First, find your place, get in the meditation position, relax, shut your eyes, take a few deep breaths, and repeat to yourself, "My body is whole and healthy. I am calm and loving. I am prosperous and successful." And repeat these to yourself daily until you notice a difference in your life.
Good.
You want to give us those statements again?
Do we have time?
Yes, we've got about 60 seconds left, so yes.
Okay. Relax. Shut your eyes, take a few deep breaths, repeat to yourself, "Your body is whole and healthy, you are calm and loving, you are prosperous and successful." Repeat these ideas over and over until they make a difference in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Tyrone, how could anyone get in touch with you if they so choose?
I can be reached at area code 503-715-6998.
Okay. Do you have an email address?
REV like Rev dot DR like Doctor Ty Waters at gmail.com.
Great, thank you. And before we go, we fade to black, I just want to say I've held off all this time This is my son, y'all. Okay. Portland, Oregon, and last name Waters. Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, okay. All right, Mama Waters. We should all be very proud. I'm very proud of you, Ty, and I love you so much.
Thank you. I love you too, Auntie. I'm giving you a big hug all the way from Portland.
Thank you, honey. All right.
Thank you so much, Donna Waters, for being with us today. And we are out of time, and you have truly blessed us and blessed everyone that has the opportunity to listen to this program, either live today or on a replay. You are so filled with so much knowledge and compassion for the mental wellness or the mental illness arena, and you describe it like Star has said brilliantly in your book, and it is also on Amazon. I just wanted to give a shout out. The book title is You Would Be Paranoid Too If This Happened to You, U.S. Destructive Practices, A True Life Story Told by Dr. Tyrone Waters. So I just wanted to, you guys support his work, please. That's what we're here to do. And with that, Star, you got any closing words?
I just want to say thank you, Tyrone, for gracing our studio here, our microphone, and your voice was strong and very, very effective in teaching us about the mental health system. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
All right, well, we'll see you guys on the third Thursday, which is the 18th. And until then, y'all know, just stay cool, stay safe, and be blessed. And again, Dr. Waters, we are so thankful that you're doing the work that you're doing. All right, we'll see you guys next time.
All right.
Bye.
Tell Mom I said hello. Bye-bye.
All right. Blessings in the highest to everybody.
Yes, thank you.